Kyle, right? And Valencia Street, you know, it is the bike corridor, at least for me and many other biking citizens. But we just recently heard about another collision there that left a cyclist pretty injured. I mean, I think she went to the hospital. And there's been talk about maybe making improvements to this street that previously, when it got bike lanes, it was a huge victory. What have you been seeing on the street recently?
You know, if we can go back in time and talk for just a second about how...
Yeah. Time travel.
Let's go way back. Mm-hmm. Why are our streets paved in the first place?
Oh my God, you want to get philosophical about this. Okay, why are our streets paved in the first place?
We recently wrote a blog post about this. So most people don't know, almost nobody knows. Bicycle advocates were the ones that got streets paved in the very beginning.
Interesting.
Pre-cars. Yeah, the roads were rough. It was cobblestones and mud and dirt. And in order to ride your bike down the street, we needed them paved. So we paved the way, literally, for cars to have a nice, enjoyable, smooth ride. Would have happened eventually, but we were the vanguards. And then so now fast forward to the 70s when we got the, that's when we had the bike lane striped on Valencia. It was a very... progressive move. It was controversial. It was hard fought. The story goes that Leah Shannon, the director then of the SFPC, was told by a city supervisor, "This street will get paved. A bike lane will get paved over my dead body."
Wow. Okay.
I don't think she was. I think she's still alive. But there is a bike lane on Valencia Street. It was a really, really tough battle.
Yeah.
And it has served the community very well for many years. But I'm remembering that our streets were paved because cyclists were the advocates and fought hard to improve our streets, and cyclists fought hard to improve our streets and make them more bike friendly again. But now, again, they've been taken away from us. So now they make a really great loading and unloading zone for car share services.
Everybody. Yeah. And I think that's like a little bit tricky because I think any of us who use roads get into this feeling of, well, when I'm on my bike, I'm a cyclist and I am hated universally by drivers. And when I'm a driver, I'm hated universally by cyclists, and it sort of pits us against each other, and it's like it becomes a question of whose road is it anyway. But that's interesting that the origin of it was actually, you know, a little bit more collaborative. And also now the Bicycle Coalition really pushes this idea of everybody is a road user, and at different moments you might be using it in different capacities, so it doesn't make any sense to pit people against each other in categories.
Absolutely. Yeah, I agree with that.
But, I mean, the reality remains. On a Friday night, Valencia Street is basically unbikeable. I was talking to one person recently who was telling me, now that Mission Street has so much fewer cars on it, it's actually more enjoyable to bike down Mission Street than Valencia.
That's the irony, right? Is that we want to bike on streets that don't have the bike lane, because mm-hmm. the bike lane is not really a bike
lane. It's a parking lane. It's a loading zone now. What was the statistic you were telling me a while ago when we were talking about how many ride shares pick up and drop off on a block of Valencia?
So there's a really interesting map, and we wrote a blog post about this as well. The two car share services, Uber and Lyft, collaborated and did a data download to this interactive map, and you can actually pick the day of the week and the hour of the day, and by block all over the city of San Francisco, you can see what's happening. And on the block where my shop is, which is between 18th and 19th on Valencia, there are between 7 and 8 p.m. on a Saturday night, 100 pickup and drop-offs on that one block in 1 hour.
100 an hour in one block. How many blocks down the Valencia Street corridor? And how many hours are in an evening? Well, that's true.
And how many days are in a week?
Ah! Well, yeah, and also, I mean, what that ends up meaning for road users is a little bit of conflict, because I think there's maybe this idea that cyclists are making a pretty big deal about this, which I suppose is fair, and that we can just go around when someone is parked momentarily in a bike lane, sort of this I'm only here for a moment mentality. Mm-hmm. Which is understandable, but I think the issue that arises is that then you have to dodge, the cyclist has to dodge, and then the driver that's coming down the road has to dodge the cyclist or brake, which then either causes a little bit of a backup or, worst case, a collision. And also can just be unpleasant because everybody's yelling at each other, like, get out of my way! Everyone's in each other's way.
Right. And in one block, there can be four cars parked in a bike lane with people unloading and loading on a single block. So that means just like traversing in and out and in and out and in and out. And, you know, for an old school urban cyclist like me, I can deal with that and I can handle that. But imagine somebody that's new to urban cycling, that's trying it for the first time, that's going to give it a shot. And that's not a good experience. That's the kind of experience that's going to make them think, you know, maybe urban cycling isn't for me. Mm-hmm. I'm going to throw in the towel and I'm going to go back to driving Uber, Muni. And that's not good for our city.
Why?
The more people... So biking is a very healthy thing for cities. It means fewer people in cars. It means it's better for our health. It's better for our environment. And it's better for our community. We actually... So cyclists will understand this. When you come to a stop sign, not stop light, and you're surrounded by other cyclists, not every time, by any stretch, but sometimes there's this nod that happens. Sometimes there's a smile. Sometimes there's a hello. That kind of spirit of camaraderie and friendliness doesn't tend to happen when you're sealed in a ton of glass and steel.
Or when the guy that I'm just catching up to at the stoplight just ran another red like a block away, and then I had to overtake him and leapfrog him, and I'm really mad because he keeps running the freaking stoplight. But yes, camaraderie.
I think my point is that we tend to be more connected to our communities when we're not sealed up in a capsule. Mm-hmm. We tend to know our neighborhoods better. We tend to, like, you watch somebody that's a generally friendly, respectable person, and then you put them behind the wheel of a car, and you can see their behavior change. You can see them shake their fist, and you can see them use language they don't normally use. They get red-faced, they cut people off. It changes us when we get, there's this anonymity that happens.
Right.
But you don't see that from pedestrians on the sidewalk, and you don't see that from cyclists because we have accountability, I think.
Well, cyclists, I mean, there are people who give cyclists a bad rap because they do things like bang on somebody's roof when they're parked in the bike lane as they go by, or yell profanities or whatever it is. I mean, like, this is, oh God, I can't believe I'm saying this, but, you know, this happens on both sides.
Okay. Here's what's interesting. Usually we don't talk about this we don't talk about motorist behavior.
That's true.
What we talk about is, well, you know, I saw it. So people come into my shop all the time. They're like, my brother told me that he saw a cyclist back in 97 that ran a red light. What do you have to say about that?
What do you have to say about that?
You know what? If we look at the behavior of the operator of the vehicle proportionately, and if we're gonna talk about behavior and respect proportionately, we have normalized bad behavior from motorists. It is a part of our daily lives, and we see it in ourselves, and we see it every single day. So we don't talk about it. But if a cyclist does something that we don't like, man, that's unforgivable, and we talk about it forever.
And all cyclists must be like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky. But there's, I think, another assumption about cyclists and pedestrians and even transit users that I think is salient also to your role as a merchant, which is I mentioned briefly the red lanes on Mission Street and how that has kind of reduced car traffic. At least it seems that way. People are worried about limiting the access of consumers to businesses by car because of this assumption that, especially with retail, people will be buying in higher volumes if they're transporting what they're buying in cars. Has that held true for you?
Yeah, sure. You know, and I'm a very active member in the Valencia Corridor Merchants Association, which is probably the most bike-friendly merchants association in the entire United States. But we're not necessarily ready to willy-nilly give up as many parking spaces as possible, those parking spaces, we realize, don't come back. When you give up a parking space for any reason, it usually doesn't come back. It's a permanent decision.
And what effect does that have?
Well, it does mean that it's harder to drive to our neighborhood and find a parking space and go shopping or go to a... But you know what? That's a real concern. We also have decided, on the other side, you could argue that we have decided as a city, we are a transit first city, and that includes biking.
That would be great if the transit was better.
Yeah.
I mean, really, exactly. I really sympathize. I don't have a car, but when I've driven cars in the city, it's been very, very difficult. And if I had to try and find parking every single day, or if I wanted to go to Valencia Street to hang out there for a while and I was coming, say, from out of town, man, I really see how that could be frustrating when there's no parking available.
You know what, though? So if we were to add 100 new car parking spaces in the Mission District...
So many people are like, oh my God, yes, please.
I don't know that we would really even feel it, even know it. Would that be enough? Like, how many new parking spaces would we have to add before... You would think, oh, let me just drive to the Mission and park, and then I'll go shopping.
Hmm.
Like, we just don't usually think like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. And also, I mean, it does raise the question of, is it actually discouraging people? No matter how bad our transit systems may sometimes be, you know, is it actually encouraging people not to drive to the Mission from outside the city or outside the neighborhood because the parking is so bad? We really do have a reputation. And I wonder if it's having the intended effect, do you think?
If having the intended effect of being a neighborhood that's difficult to get to?
Well, encouraging people to use methods other than cars to come here.
Yeah, you know, this is not a car-friendly city,
mm-hmm.
and it never has been. It's hard to make a left turn anywhere.
Yeah.
It's hard to find parking anywhere. It's every block there's a red light or a stop sign, and it's just like to get from whatever... To get from here, from the Mission District to the Golden Gate Bridge, I mean, you have to plan 20 to 30 minutes just to leave the city.
Yeah. What does that mean for merchants on the corridor? I mean, going back to, well, you lose a parking spot.
I think it's kind of an old-fashioned notion to think that my customers all drive to me to go shopping. And I know that a lot of merchants in a lot of other neighborhoods and merchants associations, that's the mentality. But I look at the merchants that come into my store and they are, or to the stores next to mine, and they have arrived by BART, or they have walked, or they've come by bike, or they've come by Muni, or they've come by Uber or Lyft, and they know that they're in the neighborhood to walk. I actually don't have that many merchants that drive.
Merchants or customers?
I'm sorry, I don't have that many customers that drive to the shop. No, I think it's different for restaurants at night, but not that different because I think most of the customers for evening restaurants arrive by car share services also.
Mm-hmm. Well, can we make a different inference there? Is the reason that we have so many car shares so many ride-hail services stopping on Valencia all the time? Because of the parking? People are like, well, I'm never going to drive my own car because I can't park it, so I might as well just take Lyft.
Yeah, so we have exchanged one problem for another.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have a lot more... the number of parking spaces in the Mission hasn't changed dramatically in the last decade or so. We've lost a few here and there. We lost one to a parklet on this block, and we lost... one to Ford bike cars or Ford bicycle shares on this block. But big picture, we haven't lost that many. What we have done is we've exchanged people driving to the Mission and driving around and circling to look for a parking space for a car service to pull up into the front door and drop off a passenger.
Mm-hmm. So talking about car shares in the bike lanes... Back to our mm-hmm. first topic here. I believe there's an action planned tonight that we've seen before in the Mission on Valencia around this. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, so there's an advocate. I'm going to mess up his last name, Matt something.
Matt's coming to the mission.
Matt's coming to the mission tonight. I don't know. I don't know that he doesn't live in the mission actually, but he is an advocate for protected bike lanes. And I was a little skeptical at first, but I liked the idea of making a statement that this is actually a problem that needs to be addressed. Is it protected bike lanes or are there other solutions? I don't know, but something needs to happen. A conversation needs to happen. And so I was excited to participate in this street theater, which is basically instead of the plastic barriers that you see between the car traffic and the bike traffic. Human beings stood there protecting the bikes. And so that's actually happening again tonight. There's another action happening tonight on the block in front of my store, which is on Valencia between 18th and 19th Street from 5 to 7.
Okay. And I believe I heard that Supervisor Jeff Sheehy was going to be there.
I have heard that too.
Is he an advocate for protected bike lanes? Do you know?
He does seem to have an interest in protected bike lanes and an interest in I don't yeah. So he has some interest in
We'll see. We'll
bicycle
see what he
advocacy.
decides to do.
So
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, what happened last time? Was anybody injured? Were there any confrontations? Were there any illuminating conversations? And what do you expect tonight?
I think it was an interesting thing to see, and especially just sort of standing there on the street and watching what happened. So people still got dropped off. People still picked up passengers.
They just stopped in the car
They
traffic
just
lane?
stopped in the car traffic lane, and it just took them a second, and then they kept going. And then they got to the red light and they sat there and waited, and it didn't really seem to have any impact on traffic. I don't think anybody got to their destination any later than they would have because somebody stopped in front of them and a door flung open and a passenger got in or got out and the door closed and the car moved on. We have red lights here that are going to slow us down anyway. So how fast do you need to get to that next red light?
Yeah, well, that's a question I'm asking other road users constantly in my head at high volume. All right, well, so we'll look for the human bike barrier tonight and see what comes of that. What is next for you personally? You're making a big move. You've been at Mission Bicycle for a long time. You've been active in bicycling as well as in the Merchants Association. What's in your future, Jefferson?
So I came on board Mission Bicycle Company for a year or two to help these guys out. I was really interested in what they were trying to do. You could tell instantly when you walk in the door or when you visit the website that something is different here. This is not a conventional bike shop. And basically, the founders were trying to really reinvent the urban bike. When you go into a conventional bike shop and you ask to see their city bikes, you're usually shown a hybrid. They're heavy. They're maybe a little ugly. They're full of logos and racing
Throwing
stripes.
shade. What's a hybrid for those of us who don't ride?
A hybrid is what the bike industry pawns off on us as a city bike. It's a cross between a road bike and a mountain bike. So basically, take two bikes that are not designed for urban riding and breed them together, and the child of that hybrid is the hybrid, is the city bike. So yeah, it's a cross between a road bike and a mountain bike. Terrible design. Terrible.
So, how is it different at Mission Bicycle? No hybrids to be seen.
No hybrid. So basically, we started from the ground up and just thought about every single component and the geometry and the materials and the paint and every single aspect of if we could design a bike for urban commuting, what would that look like? So one thing I found interesting in my research is that all city bikes are designed by people that do not ride bikes in cities.
Well, that's a little crazy.
I think so. All the big bike companies are located in suburban office parks. Not one is located in a city. So the designers of these bikes get in their car and leave their home with a yard and drive to work and plop down at a cubicle and start designing a city bike. And they are doing this based on what they think that we want. What we're doing is we're designing what we want. Do we need two cup holders for a 15-minute, 20-minute commute?
Yes. But I take your point.
Do we need an adjuster on our seat post, a quick release that allows us to remove our seat post or change the height of the seat post on the fly?
Well, it also allows a thief to adjust your seat post into their arms on the fly.
It makes absolutely no sense to put a quick release on a seat post for a city bike. Like, these kinds of decisions are insane. So we went back to the drawing board and as urban cyclists, and we talked about what would we like, and that's what we designed.
And now you're jumping into coffee.
Yeah. So here I am. I came on board for a year or two and I ended up staying for 7. And I finally got us to a place where I feel really good about what's happening with Mission Bicycle. We're about to launch a new design, the latest design. The bike has integrated lights. So I don't know if you've ever had that experience where you forgot to bring your lights with you.
Or they got stolen because I forgot to take them off in the morning.
Or you didn't remember to change the batteries because maybe the battery in the back mm-hmm. ran out, but not the one in the front. Or mm-hmm. you hop on your bike and you start pedaling your light and you think, oh, I should turn my lights on, but you don't really want to lose your momentum and stop and pull over. So you reach around under the seat post behind you and you're clicking around and you're kind of hoping that you turned it on. So we have basically eliminated all of these problems by building the light into the bike, one battery, which is rechargeable, and one button turns both lights on. They can't be stolen. You can't forget to bring them. They're easy to use and they're easy to maintain.
Okay. So now you've gifted the world this self-lighting bicycle, and again, you're jumping into coffee?
Yeah. So I made the decision. It's time for a new challenge for me. And I didn't know where I was going to go, but I had like a conversation with a fellow merchant at the Valencia Corridor Merchants Association. And she said, yeah, why don't you come join my team?
Wow, cool. And what are you going to do?
So I'm going to actually do very similar things that I do at Mission Bicycle Company. I'm going to solve problems. I'm going to manage projects. I'm going to help build the brand and help the company grow and streamline the process and try to fix any problems they have.
Mm-hmm. Well, cool. And you're still going to be representing merchants on Valencia Street, right?
Yeah. And I'll still be on the Valencia Corridor Merchants Association board. I think it's kind of cool that I'm able to stay essentially in the neighborhood and work for a company that's very similar to Mission Bicycle Company. Both companies were born on Valencia Street. They both share similar values. They make a product right here in San Francisco, in the Mission District. And they're run in a very respectable and ethical way.
Yeah, it's amazing that Valencia Street has this cohesive sort of culture, this merchant culture, this like, you know, independent business, small business sort of mentality.
Fiercely independent.
Well, all right. So we are coming up to the end of our time here, but I wanted to see if I could get you to sort of close things out with your vision of the ideal future Valencia Street. I don't care how many years into the future, but like, what is your dream Valencia corridor look like in
so
all aspects?
That's a really great question. And my ideal vision is that we don't try to fix this problem or fix that problem and try to retrofit this or retrofit that, but we actually think bigger picture. If we could start from scratch and design the perfect street, what would that look like? And not design it for yesterday or today, but designing for tomorrow.
What's tomorrow? So, well, how does it look different?
It seems as though self-driving cars are inevitable.
Ooh, yeah.
You may not like it. I may not like it. I may not like Ubers parked on the bike lane, but car share services are not going anywhere. And self-driving cars, I think, are coming. And what we have a history of doing is that when the world changes, our streets don't change. And we need to evolve our streets with the world.
And what does the merchant mix look like? What do the buildings look like in your ideal future Valencia Street?
I think that, I mean, hopefully if there's, if Valencia could be an oasis of retail, maybe the people come from all over the world to see the last retail stores. Remember retail? You could go
Remember
into a
when
store?
You could go into a store and there would be a person there?
They had human beings and you could touch the merchandise and feel it and try it on and look in the mirror and put the hat on.
No, that's just vulgar. Someone else tried on that shirt. That's really weird, Jefferson. And you had to pay someone to stand around in the store all day long and talk to people?
It seems obsolete, I know. But yeah, maybe Valencia Corridor could be a museum of retail.
That's amazing. Jefferson, thank you so much. This has been such a fun conversation.
Oh, this was great. Thanks for having me.
Listen Local, we'll be back 2 weeks from today with more news and narratives from the neighborhood. You can check us out online, of course. We're on missionlocal.org, and you can also try us at info@missionlocal.org if you would like to reach us by email. And we're on Twitter @MLNow. And up next, it's Back to the Music. Keep it right here on BFF.FM. Thanks for listening.